You're listening to the Incarcerated Christian Podcast, where we shine light on the dark side of Christianity and how it affects people and communities. I'm Robin Mitchell Stroud, and I'm here with my co-host, Deborah Levy Martinelli. We'll be covering a variety of topics, from individual survivor stories, including our own, to the influence of religion on our national politics. To learn more about the podcast, visit our website, theincarceratedchristian.com, or connect with us on TikTok and Instagram at The Incarcerated Christian, and on Twitter at @TICC_podcast_. Now, on to the show.
Hey, everyone. It is November, and for us, that is Gratitude Month. So our last episode was with, as you will recall, Madison Fournier. And today, Robin and I wanted to talk about what we are grateful for in terms of the guests that we have had over the past many months of our podcast debut, and just generally what we're grateful for. And we're going to go through and talk about all of our guests. We hope that they're all listening. We will let you know in advance when this is going to run, and we hope you will jump in. So I have started, Robin and I prepare for these things a little bit differently. She goes really deep. I mean, you go so deep. You will read every word that every guest has written, if you can, and then you give me the cliff notes.
That's true, but I didn't do that this time. I know you're shocked.
I kind of am shocked because I have everything written out, and you're going to be winging it more than I will, I think.
Yeah, that's probably right. In this case, that's probably right. But we don't know kind of what we're doing anyway. We're a little bit winging it. It's our first kind of looking back in gratitude episode. So we'll see how it goes.
We'll see how it goes. And I will say this one more thing before we start. I have been listening to whatever your politics are. I would encourage people to listen to the Renegade podcast with Barack Obama and Bruce Springsteen, who come from such completely different backgrounds, but have these common experiences somehow that they talk about in a very open and honest way. So I am sort of channeling the two of them today as well.
I love it. Common experiences. I'm sure we're going to find common experiences that we have in looking back, but also common experiences that our guests talked about. So I'm just going to take a few notes as we go along.
All right. You want me to start since I wrote everything out?
Sure. Go for it.
I have done these in chronological order with a few exceptions.
I will fly with you.
Okay. So we had four guests to begin with, and we dropped all four episodes at one time. But in my head, our first one was Jeremy Coleman. So Jeremy Coleman is a pastor, and he is a one-of-a-kind pastor. He's also a phenomenon on TikTok, which is where we first learned of him. And what I am grateful for with respect to Pastor Coleman is his courage in expressing his views, even though they can be controversial in the world in which he lives as an evangelical Christian pastor. And in fact, it has been very controversial for him and has resulted in some unforeseen consequences. But he doesn't whitewash anything. He is an articulate and powerful advocate for good and an unapologetic critic for abuses of power and people. And one of the things that he said was, if you think that somebody is not saved and you don't think they have a personal relationship with Jesus and you pray for their death, what does that say about you? That means you want them to go to hell. But he also offers a solution to this type of discord. His philosophy is, I don't agree with you, but that's okay. And let's talk about it.
Yeah, he's so amazing. And of course, he comes from my background, and he was in the town right next to the town I grew up in when we found him. And you are so right. Since we talked with him, I think we talked with him in May, or maybe it was in April, getting ready to launch in May. But anyway, he had just over 100,000 followers at that time, which was just amazing. So clearly his no holds barred kind of critique of what he calls the American church. He means the American Evangelical Church and Christian nationalists in particular, has made him very popular, but as you said, controversial. And since we have spoken with him, he has lost his position as the, you know, the music minister for his church in, I think it's in Yukon. But I will say that his TikTok membership has grown to almost 250,000 followers. So his church, to me, has just moved online. There are, and I still follow him very closely, and I read the comments a lot, and people are still saying, you know, thank you for making me believe in church again or in God again, or, you know, thank you for making me feel loved again, because he talks with a lot of people who are marginalized by our, you know, dominant Christian, you know, like churches. And the other thing he loves to say, which I grabbed onto, is love people unconditionally, no strings attached, or love passionately, I think is what he says. Love passionately, no strings attached. And that's what he is proving over and over through his TikTok ministry. So yay for Pastor Jeremy Coleman. He flipping rocks. And I loved him, you know, at the time, just because he was so honest about really tough topics. And granted, he can get away with it in a way that a female tackling the same topics maybe wouldn't, because he's a male authority and a theologian in the Christian community, or a pastor in the Christian community. But I love him. I just love him.
And we would love to have you back, Pastor Coleman, if you're listening.
Yeah, for sure. Come join us again.
Yes. Shall I go on to the second
one? Yeah, let's go on. Yeah.
So our next one is Dr. Charles Kimball, who is an expert in religious studies and talks and studies and teaches about the intersection of religion and politics, particularly in the Middle East, which is what we talked to him about. And I'm grateful for his thoughtful and insightful approach to the key to deep human understanding. He said, the more we can do to humanize each other, the more we can break through stereotypical monolithic images. Yes. And when he said that, he was talking about that intersection of religion and politics, specifically in the Middle East. But he was very clear, and remains very clear, that his message applies to all of us. And it is incumbent upon each one of us to start those important conversations.
Yes. And that is, you picked up on one of the very things that I loved about him, which is he stresses the importance of humanizing the other, whoever the other is. You know, one of his big strategies is you must talk to the others. It's like you must talk, have conversations with people, have dialogue. But again, this is a person who used to be an ordained Baptist minister, Harvard educated. I came across him in my doctoral studies because of a book he wrote, When Religion Becomes Evil, The Five Warning Signs. So I love the fact that he takes on sort of toxic Christianity. And he takes on extremism, I guess, to be more particular about it. And one of the things that I just love about him, too, is he takes on, you know, there is no one truth. Like, there are facets of truth. It makes me think of that. I don't know who said this, but I read somewhere once that no mouth can utter the whole truth. So the way that he comes at truth makes me think of that. But I just love him because he's unafraid to look at the dark side and to challenge people in our dominant religious communities to, you know, rethink what they know about the people that we like to target as being the problem ones. And in particular, Muslims, you know, we talked a lot with him about the reaction to Muslims after the Iran hostage situation, right? And then also after 9/11.
Right.
So I just love him. He's really good. He was another one. So that's, I just want to note, that's two pastors so far that we've talked with.
Well, we've got another theologian who I have coming up next. Actually, several in a row.
Okay.
Which will give you lots of fodder here.
Okay.
And the next one I have on my list is Chris Wilson.
Okay. Yep. Ooh, I love her.
Oh my gosh, yes. I am grateful that she cuts right to the heart of issues and is fearless in saying what she means. Like, religion in and of itself is simply one more social construct that allows people to have an excuse to control.
Yeah.
And another comment of hers that I love, when she was talking about how women are valued in some churches or not valued, more specifically, she said, if the things that we put in churches communicate what we value about people, clearly Mary, even though the Church of Our Lady in Copenhagen was named for her, wasn't represented there. And by extension, neither were women.
Okay, you're going to be slightly embarrassed when I tell you this. That's actually something that I said, which I may have said when we were talking to Chris Wilson.
Oh, all right. Well, you two were so mind-melding. That may have been why it came out that way.
I think that's absolutely right. Because the other thing is her dissertation or her master's thesis for the Chicago Theological Seminary is the most like my own work. And we took on the exact same topics, like exactly what you just said, but also like the toxic purity culture that these kinds of religious traditions create and grow. And also, do you remember her talking about pet sins?
Yes. Oh, yes.
I loved her whole notion of pet sins and how when we give attention, when churches spend so much time on pet sins, whether that's sex before marriage or, you know, pornography or whatever, they actually make it worse because it's like with a kid, you say, no, 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 no. Well, that's all they can think about, right? So they're going to go out and do it. But anyway, the other thing is, do you remember her talking about the militarization of Christianity? And of course, I write about that in my own dissertation. And this is probably why you have that, you've pulled that quote. It's because her research is the most like my own research. And she was so revolutionary to me because she also looked at consent violations within Christian communities, whether that's by people or by how we interpret our theology. And that is so good because that put a new spin on my experiences growing up that I never put together, which is it was fraught with consent violations. People don't ask, they tell. You know, you are told, you are not asked. And so I just really appreciated her too for just coming right at it.
She does do that. And yeah. My apologies for not properly attributing that quote.
That's
as a journalist,
okay.
I should know better. And I would have gotten an F in my advanced reporting class had I done that.
You probably, did you find that in like the transcript?
I think I found it in our social media. So
yeah.
It makes perfect sense because you two
were so
simpatico.
Simpatico entirely. I love Reverend Wilson.
So yeah. I am grateful for both of you for that conversation.
Thank you. I love that you picked that out. I love it. Thank you.
So the next person that also a theologian, former pastor, but also an amazing artist and writer is David Hayward.
Ah, the Naked Pastor.
The Naked Pastor. I am so grateful to him for his multidimensional approach to helping people down their own paths of deconstruction, a term that I did not understand in this context until we started this podcast. I was like, what? Deconstruction? Are we tearing down buildings? What are you talking about?
No, you gave that a spin that I really liked, which is tearing the bars down of the religious prison, right? That's deconstructing. Yeah.
Once I understood the concept, I could visualize something concrete. So
yeah.
Yes. But he was key, I think, to that. And he uses his many gifts as an artist,
yeah,
as a cartoonist, as a writer, all of that to reach multitudes who may not be able to hear the message any other way of inclusivity, acceptance, and what you were talking about earlier, that unconditional love. They wouldn't be able to hear it through any other medium. And one thing I love about David is all of his cartoons about LGBTQ and that community and how the church is not welcoming to that community. And he takes that straight on.
Straight on. And sometimes he gets backlash for that, but he gets a lot more love and props because I still follow him really closely. And as you know, when we spoke with him, I totally geeked out. I love this man so much. I have all of his books and, you know, his gear. I've bought like t-shirts and things.
You wore one of his t-shirts when we interviewed him.
I did. And the text on the t-shirt said, "Questions are the answers." And I love that so much because that is so open-ended. And, you know, the church that raised me, there are no questions. You just believe, right? Just believe. So again, but he's another former minister. He was in ministry for 30 years before he left, and he too paid a price for leaving. And it took him a minute to sort of get his grounding in this new online, you know, ministry, but he's got a great community of people who follow him, and he's wonderful. He uses his art, his cartooning, to absolutely kind of take on Christian dogma and to challenge the status quo, whether that has to do with the imbalance of gender in the church, you know, gender dynamics, or as you said, how unwelcoming a lot of communities are for LGBTQ+ people. And he does it in a way that's so direct, but also I think respectful. I know it depends on which side of the topic that you kind of feel on. I mean, that you fall on, but he's so affirming to so many people, and he does it with a little bit of a sense of humor. He's wonderful. And then there's this whole other side of his art work that is like paintings that go deep, that make you feel deeply. So I don't know. And also, I really just appreciate that he includes things like dreams. He legitimizes dreams as spiritual messages, which, you know me, I've dream journaled for a long time, and I absolutely, you know, find messages in my dreams. I don't know. He's wonderful. He's just wonderful. I hope he comes back and talks with us again too.
Oh yes. He is fabulous.
And I just have to one more nod about my t-shirt, "Questions Are the Answers." He also has a fabulous little book that talks about the different stages of questioning that people go through when they leave the church, and then when they're able to kind of go through their whole spiritual transformation process. And it's a book that I wish that I had read when I first, you know, left my church, because it would have saved a lot of time, you know, in terms of not struggling with questioning. I would have felt affirmed in my questioning. So I just, you know, highly encourage people to check out his work online. Yeah.
I feel like in our show notes for this episode, we're going to have a lot of handles and a lot of hashtags.
Oh my gosh, we are. It's going to take us a minute to gather them, but yeah, we're happy to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's move on to yet another theologian and also a psychologist, Dr. Carrie Doering.
Woo!
She is a pioneer in the pastoral work of trauma care and speaks from her own enormous personal losses, notably the death by suicide of her son, Alex, and the unexpected death of her husband soon thereafter. And I'm grateful that she shared the tools upon which she relies, including her daily rituals. Like, she told us about how she has hooked up a light that automatically turns on in the evening and turns off the next morning. That reminds her of Alex, and she'll walk by it and she'll say, "Hi, Alex."
Hi, Alex. Mm-hmm.
So, so sweet. And those rituals of her help her remember her loved ones in a way that give her comfort and peace.
Now, my big, I know that this was a particularly hard interview for you. You can barely get through even just talking about it right now. I want to hug you. I can see her through the video, but I can't. We're not in the same room. But it's because you've had a lot of loss over the last 5 years, and it was just a particularly hard interview. And I was really happy too that you grabbed onto some of the spiritual practices that have helped her to find what she calls the goodness in grief.
Yes.
I mean, it's just beautiful.
Yes.
The goodness in grief. And you know that I found her also while working on my dissertation, because her dissertation was a little book called Internal Desecration. And so much of that spoke to my, you know, my early experiences around religious struggles and how damaging that is to our what she calls the inner sanctuary. So I don't know, she was really important to a lot of my early deconstruction journey. And I love that her scholarship still focuses around trauma and religious struggles, but not just religious struggles, just human struggles, which is what so resonated with you. Yeah. And then the other thing that she talked about, which I thought was really helpful, was for her, the importance in community with, you know, with supporting her through grief. And that can be a community of two, or it can be a whole church community. You know, it's just, I just thought that that was really, really wonderful. Yeah. The whole goodness and grief part was so wonderful to me. And she did have some really unique spiritual practices, like the one you described with the light.
I love that one.
Well, her other really big one was listening to choral music, which she shared with us. One of the pieces that was so meaningful to her when, I think she was listening to it when her son died, right? Well, when she learned about her son's death. So anyway, yeah, she was wonderful. And yet another former reverend.
Yes.
Yes.
And one who started and ended our episode with breathing exercises,
yeah,
which we all need to remember to do from time to time. In fact, before you and I started this, we hit our chimes and we
smelled our sage.
We went through our own rituals.
Clearing our space.
Yes. Yep. Yes. So, yes, Dr. Doering, thank you.
Yes, so wonderful.
Then we come to your friend and now my friend, Kenlyn Colleen, who introduced me to the concept of the divine feminine.
Yeah.
I'm gonna let you talk more about that. But uh-huh. To me, she was such a revelation. I've lived my entire adult life understanding the concept of power of women in society in the workplace, but Kenlyn's spiritual take on that power through the lens of spirituality and what I now understand to be shadow work, that hard internal work that you know so well,
yeah,
that we have to do to heal our wounds, has been a true gift to me.
Yeah.
And as I greeted her when we recorded her episode, OMG for me now is OM goddess.
Yeah, that's right. Oh my goddess instead of oh my God. Oh, she's wonderful. You know, I came across her last year. Was it only last year? Feels like longer than that.
Maybe a year and a half ago.
Maybe a year and a half ago. And I became aware of her through a Kundalini yoga instructor that I love. And Kenlyn was hosting the Divine Feminine Summit, which was a 3-day summit where we just dove into the divine feminine, which is wonderful. And you know, that divine feminine, you know, that's like a mother god, right? I was only raised with a father god, and the mother god didn't exist. And so when I started in my own story, when I left my church, my perception of God was so damaged that I went hardcore on the other side. I was looking for female, kind of anything to hold onto on the female side, because it had been so missing for so long. So I probably 2 decades ago started really looking into the divine feminine and studying the divine feminine. But her summit was wonderful because she grabbed people from all over the world and covered lots of different elements of the divine feminine. And then we signed up for her next big divine. Was it a summit? I can't remember if it was another summit that we attended together.
I think it was a summit.
It was
yes.
A summit. Anyway, the fact that you picked up on divine feminine empower, she is a spiritual empowerment coach, and specifically for the divine feminine. And more recently, I've enjoyed, she's kind of focusing on the importance of integrating the divine feminine and the divine masculine. Like, you don't have to be either or. There is a balance there. But I just love her. And we cannot forget, you know, I have so much gratitude to her for her, because the podcast was her. She doesn't like to take credit. She likes to say this was us in, you know, conversation. But it was in a coaching call with her that she suggested a podcast. And the podcast has been so lovely to be able to do that. I have so much gratitude to her for that. But yeah, she's wonderful.
And Kenlyn, let me just say to you, thank you for dragging me kicking and screaming into a podcast on a topic about which I know practically nothing.
Yeah. Deborah and I, we haven't talked about kind of our overall, like the gratitude for just the podcast and the kind of the birthing of it. Boy, we had a steep learning curve, but even steeper for my big, because yeah, this is kind of my area of expertise in terms of the subject matter, but you are the expert on the PR and communications side. So I love the questions that you bring to our interviews. They're so thoughtful. Mine are all like, hey, let's kind of like, I don't know, more woo-woo maybe. And yours are so grounded and lovely.
Mine are straight down the highway.
Yeah, they're good. They're
straight
good.
Straight down the highway.
Yeah, yeah. You have had a learning curve for there for sure.
But it's been great. I've learned so much and I continue to learn.
Yeah.
Every episode, every conversation that we have. It's fun. And the things that you tell me, and I'm like, wait, what? Let me think about that for a week or two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I get it.
Well, for you to have come this far in less than a year is remarkable.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
So speaking of remarkable, let's talk about grace.
Let's talk about sweet grace.
Oh, profoundly grateful to sweet grace, a young woman who described to us her incredible escape from a religious cult. It was a harrowing but necessary journey that she recognized she had to make if she were to survive and make her own way in this world. The stakes were high. The journey is far from over. But what I see is a courageous young woman who knew what she needed to do. And she's now a role model for and an inspiration to anyone in similar circumstances. And that's one of the reasons we loved having her on the show. And her message is, you can get out. You can live a spiritually abundant life free from the shackles of the power imposed upon you by others.
Yeah, that's right. She is so remarkable. You know, she's still in college. And I think about where I was at her age, and it's not even close. She's so far ahead of where I was at her age in terms of sort of getting out and healing. Her healing, she's just so far along in her healing journey. But she's very brave in telling her story, which is, you know, we were both so inspired by her. And the other thing that I really appreciated about listening to Grace is, you know, people will maybe hear her story and want to point to her community as some French group. But I was raised as a Southern Baptist and we experienced so many of the same dynamics. We both were raised in authoritarian, you know, church communities, patriarchal religious communities, and the impacts to her, very similar to the impacts to me. And so I was so grateful that her story and my story, while they are different in terms of I'm more mainstream and she's more fringe, no, it just shows you how kind of a foundational, I don't know if that's the right word, but anyway, the problem is, it's, you know, what I like to call the dark side of Christianity. That's what we call it. That's something that I picked up from Jerry Harris and Melody Milam. I can't take credit for that. But yeah, that's kind of where we live, and whether it's in a fringe group or in a mainstream group, it can impact people similarly. So I loved hearing her story. And the other thing that I personally am grateful for from our conversation with her is it makes me realize how far I've come, because she is still grappling with some of the things that I grappled with, you know, 20 years ago. And so it's just kind of a good gut check for how far I've come. So love her, super brave.
Well, and as an asterisk note here, she at least had role models in older siblings. You did not have that. You jumped out of that plane by yourself.
Sure felt that way. Yeah, sure felt that way until Father Don. Father Don, the comment by Father Don to Clarkie, my husband, for listeners, was the first real affirmation that I wasn't, you know, going straight to hell in a handbasket, as I like to joke. But yeah, she's just, her survivor story was wonderful.
Yeah, she was great. So now we're going to take a slight turn out of Christianity and come into an area that I know. What? Wait, what? Rabbi Ted Falcon.
I knew who you were going to say.
Oh, yeah. Rabbi Ted, who will also answer to Rabbit Ed.
Rabbit Ed.
And now that he is doing other things in addition to being a rabbi and leading services and leading rituals, for those purposes, he says, yes, you can call me Rabbi Ted. But for everything else, just call me Ted. All right, Ted, here we go. He totally rocked my world with his message that the spiritual awakening, the spiritual pursuit, the spiritual truth, the spiritual reality that is needed to combat separateness, and this is something that some of our other guests have talked about, is a radical awakening to oneness. And he's not talking about religion. He's talking about that spirituality that we all have, but may not yet have awakened to. That wasn't a message that I ever heard growing up in a conservative Jewish environment. And while I'm enormously proud of my heritage and embrace many of the lovely rituals of Judaism, Rabbi Ted opened a door for me to examine my faith and my spirituality in a completely different way.
He is wonderful. Oh my gosh, there's so many thoughts that I have about what you just said. That radical oneness, radical connectedness is so the opposite of the religious prison, you know, that we talk about in our work. The prison is designed to separate people. You know, I can't tell you the lessons growing up about, you know, don't talk to those folks, or they're worldly, or they're not, you know, like they will negatively influence your walk, or they're not Christians. Like, you can't interact with people. It's like, so just keep to your own little community so that nothing, you know, nothing can, on the positive side, or the positive spin is that so your walk won't be influenced, but really it's just, we don't want you interacting with anybody because, oh my goodness, what if you leave, right? Got to keep everybody in the prison. Got to keep
what
the
if
prisoners.
They rub off on you? Oh
yeah,
my gosh.
What if they cause you to think? Oh my gosh, you know, it's like, but anyway, he's the contrary case to carceral Christianity in terms of this radical connectedness, which I love so much. And that universal spirituality that kind of honors the interconnectedness of all life. He talked a lot about that. And honestly, I just got a kick out of him for, I don't know, owning some of the thing. Like when he said, you know, rabbinical school almost killed his spirituality off. I just find that very, you know, like it's so lovely to hear somebody talk like that. Like, school almost killed my spirituality. You go there to grow in your spirituality, and it almost killed it. So, and the other thing that he did, which was so powerful to me, this is again, holding the mirror up to himself. You know, he's been so deeply involved in interfaith activities, but he questions he says not even the effectiveness of it, but he basically said, it may have made it worse, right? I mean, and for him to acknowledge that everything he's been doing for two decades may actually be contributing to the divide and not to connection, that's a pretty big thing to say. So I don't know. I just appreciated him for lots of reasons. He's pretty cool.
He's very cool. And yeah. His work now with the Anochi Institute
is
really phenomenal. And that will be another hashtag and another handle in our show notes
for this episode. Sure.
So let's move on to Dr. Brandi Daniels, who is both an academic and a public theologian.
Uh-huh.
And I'm grateful to her for connecting church or religion with activism.
Yeah.
As she said, and I love this quote so much, and it may be one of the few things that I completely understood with your conversation with her. I was like, wait, let me catch up with that thought. But what she said was, my work at protest is me going to church.
Oh, I loved that.
Mm. And she also emphasized the need for all of us to be open to learning from one another, yet again, as some of our other guests. And she said, how can I learn differently about prayer from Buddhist meditation or reading poetry. How lovely is that?
So great. And we were, I think, talking about that too, in just relation to what she learns from her students. And I love it when teachers admit that they learn just as much from their students as what they're trying to teach, because I think it shows a lot of humility. She again, okay, so now we had the rabbi, now we have another reverend, another chaplain. But here and again, I came across an article that she had written, and one of the first things in the article was speech to the detainees, you know, and it had to do with Foucault and prisoners, and it was just like right up my alley. So yeah, we sort of were geeking out on kind of some hardcore philosophy, which I loved, which I know was like, but the things that I loved talking about with her, with some of the liberation theologies and some of the power dynamics, because of course, the article that we, I think, originally talked with her about had to do with imprisonment. And so there are absolutely power dynamics in imprisonment that relate to, religious communities. And just like you, and she talks about activism as her church, or as another way of thinking about church. Ah, so good. And I think at one point too, talking about street, she's a street chaplain. And she calls that spiritual work, and it absolutely is. And I loved it. Yeah, so I loved geeking out with her. She was awesome.
You guys had so much fun, and I had fun just watching and listening to you, even though I was like, uh-uh, not catching at all. But that happens a lot.
That's going to happen less and less the more of these interviews we do. You're going to become a subject expert.
Hey, when we start talking to journalists,
yeah,
and PR practitioners, then I will know what we're talking about.
Can
for sure.
We talk to a journalist who covers the dark side of religion?
We absolutely can.
We need to put that on our list for next year.
Let's do it. Let's find one.
I like it. Well, I know some. There are some reports. Yeah, we'll talk.
Yeah, we'll talk. We'll talk. I know of some too. All right. Okay, so now we have the one person to whom we devoted Two episodes,
yes.
Steve Wiggins, who we are grateful, first of all, for him agreeing to appear for two episodes and having us completely geek out over religious symbology in horror movies, which is something that he writes prolifically about. But he talked about that in such iconic horror movies as The Exorcist, and The Omen, and Rosemary's Baby, and Psycho, and Carrie, and many more that you may not even think of as horror movies that have the Bible and other symbols embedded in them. And we were so excited about having him unpack specifically three of those films, which he calls the Unholy Trinity, which are The Exorcist, The Omen, and Rosemary's Baby, that we watched The Exorcist and The Omen before recording the second episode, because we wanted to be able to say, okay, this is what we saw. What does this mean?
Yeah.
And it was so much fun unpacking all of that with him. And the other thing that I'm very grateful to him for is sharing with us not only the greater concept, but his experience as he watched horror movies as therapy. He went through some difficult personal and professional times, and it made him feel better to watch horror movies because he saw that, oh gosh, all these horrible things are happening to these people. My life isn't so bad.
Kind of gives you some different perspective.
Yes.
Well, you know, he is such a lovely person to talk to. And again, a former priest. So we have all of these current and former priests, rabbis, theologians. It's wonderful. But when you talked about, I can't remember how you just phrased it, but one of the things that I really appreciated, like you, is that he would answer any of our questions. Oh, yeah, that's right, because you were talking about the first two, the two that we saw in order to be able to ask questions. I can't remember how you phrased it, but anyway. The fact that he would answer our questions.
Journalistically. I phrased it journalistically.
You did. And now I've gotten like lost in my own thinking. My thoughts were jumping too fast. The fact that he would answer our questions with like such sincerity, no matter what those questions were. You asked him about green vomit. I asked him about menarche, you know, why menarche is such a big deal in horror movies. And that's first periods for people who don't know. And he had answers for everything. He was just amazing. And we found him weirdly. It's not like, you know, we set out in search for him. We found him when we were looking for critics of Hell Houses and Scare Mares and came across his work, Holy Horrors. And it was just the Bible and like religious symbols and movies, or I can't remember the subtitle, but honest to goodness, he was so entertaining. I was so grateful that he was able to be so entertaining and so like imparting of knowledge at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful, mm-hmm. Wonderful. And I'm sorry. Can I say one more?
No, you go ahead.
One more thing. The other thing is that, you know, toward the end of our first, I can't remember if it was first or second interview with him, we just asked him flat out, so watching and studying horror for you is a spiritual practice. And he said, yes. And that is such an expansive way to think about what constitutes a spiritual practice. It doesn't have to be what we traditionally think of, you know, like prayer or reading your Bible or reading or whatever. I mean, it's just expansive. And I loved it. I was so grateful for that lesson. Yeah.
Sit down with a bowl of popcorn and turn on Psycho.
Sure.
That is your spiritual practice. It's great. And the other thing that was a big takeaway for me with Steve was he pointed out to us people turn not to biblical scholars for their understanding of what the Bible is, but they turn to popular culture.
Yep.
If that happened in Pulp Fiction, for example, is one of the examples that he used, where one of the characters was, and I'm air quoting here, quoting a passage from the Bible that doesn't even exist. Steve said, but people believe it because they got it from pop culture.
That's right. And all it has to do is sound biblical or just look like somebody's reading from a Bible and people believe it because, as he pointed out, and I loved this, Americans are so biblical aware, but essentially biblical illiterate. And I grew up studying the Bible, but I was studying it from an insider perspective. So one of the things that I was so grateful to him for was when he was like breaking down the religious miseducation that raised me, like the lessons that I learned about the devil or the rapture or the Antichrist or the number 666, like he really broke that down and it was wonderful. And so he was able to like educate me from outside the religion to get a different look on those. I mean, look at those.
And pointed out that some of those things are not biblical.
Yeah, they're not.
Not in the Bible.
No, they're post-biblical or or somebody just grabbed one little piece of one little verse and then created a whole mythology around it that we've just continued to buy into because most of us don't know any better. Yeah, he was fascinating.
Fascinating and fun and kind, and we just love talking to him.
Yep.
We love you, Steve.
Yep.
So then, okay, this is very close to journalism and probably as close as we're going to get in this conversation. My protege, Madison Fournier.
Yes.
Who I first met when I was guest lecturing in a mass media course at the University of Oklahoma. She was a student and she came up to me afterwards and wanted to work for me, wanted me to mentor her, wanted to learn everything that she could from me. And again, this was a situation over the course of the years that we worked together of me learning more from Madison, specifically and most recently on social media for our podcast, then she learned from me. So I'm very grateful to Madison for what she has taught me and also that she shared with us because we had had a previous conversation when we were consulting her about social media. She shared with us her spiritual journey and some of the difficulties that she encountered. And it hasn't always been smooth, but she has never wavered from her journey. And she has the passion now, as you do, to help others find the tools to help them achieve spiritual contentment and joy and gratitude.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she is amazing. We love Madison. And you are right. She is taking everything that she is learning and turning it to serve others. I mean, she's an entrepreneur. I almost messed up that word. She is a born entrepreneur and she comes from a very entrepreneurial family, but she now is like a spiritual entrepreneur. Like her businesses, like Soak, is all geared towards helping people grow spiritually in certain ways. But I mean, it's wonderful. And I, like you, so appreciated her sharing her experiences and story with us. You know, that's the conversation that our listeners, you know, didn't get a chance to hear. But I love Madison. She is amazing. I'm not surprised because she is your protege, and you know how highly I think of you. So yeah, no surprise there. But the other thing about what she talked about a lot in our episode, just to give her some props in the episode, is how the spiritual stuff that she talked about, how about stuff for a technical word? But anyway, marrying up science with the spirituality. And I think that is really cool. You know, talking about how the brain imaging, they study the brain imaging, you know, while people are doing sound frequency therapies and things like that. It literally changes the brain. I already know this about healing. You know, when we do our healing work, our brains change because they do rewire. It just takes a while to get it to do that. And some of the things that she and Soak offer help people to do that faster and sort of with more intentionality. But Madison is an inspiration. I just think she's still so young and there is no telling where she's going to go. I just hope she remembers us whenever she gets to be, you know, like sitting next to Oprah or something, talking about all of this stuff, you know. you can see her going really far and in some cool places.
I have no doubt Madison is a person who remembers where she came from.
Yes, that's so true.
She's been.
So true.
And I call her the gift that keeps on giving.
She is, and she really has. I know we have expressed our gratitude to her, but she has been really helpful in kind of helping us learn some of the social media ropes. And she kind of met us where we are. She didn't overwhelm us, which was good because we don't have the structure for that yet, but we're getting there.
We're getting there. And Madison, we will keep you on speed dial. Have no doubt about
that.
So finally, my Lil, Robin Mitchell Stroud.
Yeah.
Let's talk about our gratitude for the podcast. I want you to talk about that.
Well, I'm going to start with the biggest thing, which is my gratitude to you, my sweet big. You know, I started talking about this, you know, after meeting with Kenlyn. And at first it was, you weren't part of that convo. And I could not imagine doing this without my bestie. I mean, not only my bestie, but also we've been working together for almost 20 years and we work so great together. We like fill each other's gaps. So I'm so grateful to you for agreeing to be on this crazy journey with me. And we both have had a steep learning curve in some of the same ways, like the technology for us. Oh my gosh, if people only understood how frustrating trying to learn some of the technology was for us. We've managed, which is good. You can teach us new tricks, right?
You actually can. Well, and it's not just the podcast technology.
No.
It's website technology and it's broadcast technology and it's everything that is in a world that I knew at a rudimentary level because I'm a print journalist.
Well, we had people for that too. We had people.
Yeah, we had people.
We just would, if it were for our work, you know, we work together, but if it were for our work, we would just call people. But we are our own people for this venture. And so I'm really grateful for the fact that we've been able to learn all of those things. But I'm super and foremost grateful for you. And then secondarily, so grateful for all of the guests who have agreed to, you know, come on, you know, a new podcast. That's kind of, you know, I was so happy for all the people who have said yes to us. And we've had so many yeses compared to the no's that it's just, I'm just really, really grateful to our guests for trusting us and taking a chance with us. And so, and just grateful for everything I've been learning. It's my area of expertise, but I learn so much from the people that we talk with. It's wonderful. It just feeds my spirit.
It truly does. And it's been a joy to watch you get your spirit fed.
Yeah.
I'm still grabbing grabbing at the light. So I don't know where they are, but I'm finding a little bit here and there.
We're learning together too. It's like,
well, we are.
Yeah,
we are. And I thought initially when you approached me about this, I thought, well, that sounds really interesting. And it would be fun to work with you on something that is not remotely related to anything that we've ever done before. But I wondered, and I think I've told you this before, whether I would be more of a liability, because I just, it's so outside my realm of understanding. Mm-hmm. But I have told you this many times. I see my contribution as being for our listeners of a certain age, the Ed McMahon to your Johnny Carson.
Well, you've been anything but a liability, but you're so good, because the other thing is I've been, you know, when you are studying inside all of this for so long, it really does help to have somebody come in with an outside perspective. This isn't your area of expertise. So the questions that you bring and that, well, not even that. What, one of the things that I'm so grateful to you is sometimes when I make little videos for our social media outlets, there is nothing that I post that I don't send to Deborah first. And she doesn't always say, yes, that's a go. So just having her honesty about, and she's so gentle in how she says it, but we've been working together long enough that I know when it's a no. So I'm like, yeah, just having that pulse, you know, what is that? Pulse check? So good. So helpful. So your contributions are many. And you know what? Here's the thing. Neither of us have been podcast hosts. We are learning our way through this together. And that is flipping awesome when you can do that work with somebody that you love and admire and respect. It's flipping awesome.
Right back at you, my friend.
Thank you. Thanks, my big. The other thing, of course, that I'm hopeful. So we've been talking about what we're grateful for. We're super hopeful that if somebody listens to one of these episodes or, you know, follows our social media, that it's helpful to them. We're hopeful that we are being helpful, because this is not just to hear ourselves talk. We're trying to do this work in service to people. And whether that's people who have been on the same kind of journey as me, whether that's people who just want to, you know, like understand more, or whether people just find it entertaining. I did have somebody pop in on our social media, listen to the Steve Wiggins episodes, and just talked about how entertaining they are. Well, that's okay. I mean, we like all listeners for all of those reasons. So, and I would just, a shameless plug, if you have ideas or like things that you would be curious for us to sort of run down in the new year, let us know. You can contact us through our website or through our social media outlets, or I guess that's really it. Those two things, right?
That's pretty much it. But yeah, we're expanding. We will be expanding over the next year. Do you want to talk a little bit about our hiatus that is coming?
Yes. So we are going to take a little break over the holidays. And that is so that we get time to do a lot more planning. We've got some ideas that we're trying to work on for next year in terms of, you know, in terms of written things, but also in terms of guests and in terms of events. So we just need the time. You know, this is not our full-time job. This is kind of our passion project. So we're going to take the holidays off to do a little work on that, on the planning for those things. So we'll pick back up. We usually launch our episodes the first and third Tuesday of the month. So we won't pick back up until the third Tuesday in January. So that will give us about a 5-week hiatus, I guess, right? In terms of we won't post anything in December or the first Tuesday. Heck, people are still going to be coming off the, you know, the holidays and New Year's Day and football and whatever they do, family events. So hopefully you won't miss us too much.
I'm glad you threw football in there.
Well, you know, that's a big tradition in our neck of the woods, football.
Yeah. It sure is. Yeah. Well, we need to wrap up. As usual, we're going a little long, but we wanted to give shout outs to all our wonderful guests and to tell them truly how much we appreciate them and have ultimate gratitude for them.
And last but not least, we want to express gratitude for everybody who is listening in. We are just very grateful, and we don't take it for granted when people, you know, listen to our episodes and offer feedback. So thank you, thank you, thank you. If you are doing those things, we really appreciate you.
Yes. So to everyone, have a happy whatever it is that you practice at the end of the year and the beginning of next year. And we will be talking to you in mid-January of 2022.
That's right. Marry whatever you believe in, and happy new year. We'll see you next year.
Thank you for listening to the Incarcerated Christian Podcast. We invite you to rate and review our show. And remember, you can find this interview and others on our website, theincarceratedchristian.com, or anywhere you access podcasts. Don't forget to connect with us on Instagram and TikTok at The Incarcerated Christian, and on Twitter at @TCPodcast_. You can find more information about us and our show on our website. Again, that's theincarceratedchristian.com. Until next time, go forth in love and light.